KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, featuring stories of people of the valley, produced by media communications and journalism students at Fresno State, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning, I'm David Chavez.
And I'm Tyler Bartlam. Thank you for joining us this morning for Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, stories about people of the Central Valley. This morning, we'll be talking to a young Muslim woman.
We'll hear two different perspectives of what it's like to be in the military.
And we'll hear from media professionals who are taking a different approach to news. The Trump presidency has changed the lives of millions of people. Women, undocumented immigrants, and Muslims have been affected by Trump's rhetoric. I talked with a Muslim student about her expectations and fears.
My name is Catherine Nijmuddin, and I'm a senior at Fresno State.
Kat started wearing a hijab about 3.5 years ago during Ramadan.
It was definitely my decision. I started wearing it. Do you know what Ramadan is? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's the month of fasting. It's like the holiest month of the year. And I decided, I'd done my research for about a year or so about it because I love the idea of it. I love the idea that your mind kind of is more important than the way you look. Like, it forces people to focus on your personality rather than like your looks. I originally was only going to wear it for Ramadan, just to kind of like test it out, but after the 30 days, I was like, you know what, I really like the way that I feel in it, so I'm just going to continue on.
Kat, like many Muslim women, fear that someone will pull off her hijab, which has happened to her at a concert.
I went to a show one time, and a guy literally grabbed my scarf and like held it and was like, take this off, you don't need to wear this, and this and that, and I was like, get your hands off me, like, I don't understand who you think you are to even touch me, and to say something like that while we're in a free country, while I am American, and while you are also, like, a white man. I don't understand.
Kat says when you wear hijab, you notice people look at you, but you get used to it. On election day, it was different. Things felt more tense. Kat became really stressed and decided to take a nap. She woke up to a president-elect Trump.
Woke up about 3, and I checked my phone. I really, really tried hard to stay off Twitter, but I knew that that's where everything was happening. So I checked my phone. My phone is blown up with text messages from people. And I was honestly praying that it was just like, oh my God, he didn't win. But it was literally all my friends texting me, I'm so sorry. Like, I think that night I probably got 20 or so text messages from people just apologizing to me, like, we failed you. And I was like, this can't be real. Like, I honestly thought it was just like a dream and that I hadn't woken up yet. It was rough. Thankfully, my class got canceled, so I stayed home all day. And it was just so emotional. Like, I didn't think that I would react that way. Like, I figured, oh, if Trump won, you know, I would just be upset about it, but nothing probably would have changed. But I don't know, like, throughout the day, I was just like overwhelmed constantly. Like, I would like do my work and I would just start crying. I think that was the only day that I was super scared of just like leaving my house, because I had already seen reports of people being attacked. And it's like, you can't just like hide that you're Muslim, like wearing hijab in America. It's like, people are gonna look at you.
Kat took to Twitter to express her feelings about the election. She tweeted, quote, I'm not going to take off my hijab. I'm going to tie it tighter. I'm not going to sacrifice a part of me to adhere to your ignorance, end quote. After she tweeted, her responses were different.
People were just tweeting me like such hateful things. They're just like, multiple times, I think maybe 5 or 6 times, people told me to go back to my country. And I was like, I was literally born in Clovis, California. This is my country. Like, you can't send me back somewhere where I already am. And I think the first few days, all of my tweets were pretty serious and just trying. I just felt like I had to address like every single thing that came my way, just to try and like educate people, like, no, this is not what's happening. But, you know, with like Twitter trolls, it just, sometimes they try and like really like ruin your mood. But I try and take everything to like a comedy, like make it humorous. Someone tweeted me that the hijab should be banned, but instead of like banned, B-A-N-N-E-D, they put B-A-N-D, like music. And so I quote tweeted them, and I was just like, oh, like what kind of band should my hijab be? Like, I'm thinking like 2009, like metalcore would be pretty cool. And people were like, oh no, like maybe you should do like emo. And I was like, okay. Like, I just tried to bring like light to this like super heavy like situation.
In the end, Kat wishes people knew the truth about her religion, and she's on a mission to educate.
I think something that I would really like to clarify about Muslims, I mean, the entire like Islam in general, people take it as a negative thing just because of everything they see on the media. Anytime there's a terrorist attack in America and the person is of Middle Eastern descent, they just kind of take it out on all Muslims. And people are expecting you to kind of like take responsibility for it, even though you have absolutely nothing to do with it. And people misinterpret your religion a lot. Like, Islam in Arabic means peace. I wish I could just like sit everyone down, like in a lecture hall or something, and be like, guys, please, this is what our religion is and this is what our religion is not. Like, ISIS, that has literally nothing to do with Islam at all. Like, they claim it, but it's absolutely nothing, because as a Muslim, you're not supposed to kill an innocent person at all. It literally says in the Quran, says if you do an atom's weight of bad, like, you would feel it. If you did an atom's weight of good, you would feel it.
In the days following this interview, Kat has continued to be harassed over Twitter. In response, her friend started the hashtag #WeAreKat and changed their profile picture to one of Kat wearing a hijab. So far, the hashtag has reached over 62,000 people around the world.
Judith Saldivar has a story about a U.S. soldier and what he has to say about serving in the military and what it means to him.
Christian Diaz is a Valley native from Coalinga, California. He serves under the U.S. Army and takes great pride in what he does. But he has one special wish: to inform others of what it really means to be a U.S. soldier.
It means to be, you know, strong, well-kept, disciplined, you know, everything that they teach you. It means to be a protector of freedom. You know, if anything, no matter what happens, as in, as in war or as anything that happens, you know, just little tasks, you have to show that you're willing to protect somebody that you do not know.
Christian says that being part of the military helps him fulfill something he's always wanted to do.
Like, being part of something bigger than myself and me enjoying to help other people was something I really wanted to do.
He says he wishes people knew that being in the military is more than just putting on a uniform.
Representing more than yourself, you're representing the military, you're representing the army, you're representing all the fallen soldiers and the soldiers ahead of you right now. So putting on that uniform, it pretty much, you have to show that you are a strong, stand straight kind of guy. And it taught me to be very respectful, it taught me to be disciplined, it pretty much made me a better man than I am today.
Sergeant Holloway of Clovis says there are a lot of misconceptions about the military. Some people agree and some people disagree with what the military does.
I think the society as a whole, if they don't support it, should try to at least maybe understand it a little bit. Just recently we had an election. Our military is what made that election possible. So if you go all the way back to the Revolutionary War, that was the standing up of the U.S. military, standing up against oppression from Britain and saying, hey, we're not going to deal with this anymore. We want to be our own thing. So the military was formed and we won a war, won the Revolutionary War, and then went from there. I mean, the military has gotten us and defends and preserves all of our rights that we have now in the country. We're the only ones that kind of, I guess you say, are in between you and the enemy, depending on who that enemy is.
Christian says he wished people understood the hard work and dedication that goes into being in the military.
I just want people to know that we're not just sitting around doing nothing. Because we're fighting, we're sacrificing our freedom for yours.
The sacrifices they make go beyond the early hours and late nights.
I can honestly say that I'm not free as I was before joining, because, you know, I'm giving up my time. I'm going away from my family. You know, I might be going to Afghanistan soon, so I'm gonna be gone for 9 months away from my son, my wife, just so I can make sure my mom, my dad, my family members, my friends, my loved ones could be safe at night so they could sleep good, while I sacrifice my sleep for theirs.
His days begin at 5:30 a.m. and usually end at 5 p.m. if he's lucky.
We give up more than we ask for it.
And U.S. soldiers are trained to put the world before themselves.
We're mainly taught is not to think for ourselves, like just to ourselves, you know, think about everybody around you, because you're fighting for the next person next to you. Because there was a time where, like, an experience that I had was I was at basic. My drill sergeant threw a dummy grenade, but no one else jumped on it. And all you hear is like, jump on it, jump on it. And without, you know, with me like looking around, I just jumped on it. And everyone got mad at me because they're all like, yo, like, Diaz, why you jump on the, you know, the dummy grenade? You have a kid back at home. Why would you risk your life for mine? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't think about it. I wasn't thinking about myself.
He wants the world to know that U.S. soldiers are human and being in the military is a risk.
Anything that we want could be taken away from us in a, you know, in an instant. Because soldiers don't come home. And it sucks. Because I've had a few friends that have not come home yet. And I don't think they might. And that scares me.
Despite all the risks and sacrifices, the payoff will make it worth it.
To wake up, you know, a few years from now, 20, 30 years from now, and be like, I did the right thing.
The support from society makes all the difference in the life of a soldier.
It builds up confidence in us. It builds up, you know, the morale, as in, okay, you know, they're supporting us, you know, we're doing the right thing, and it makes us feel great. It makes us feel even more stronger. It makes us feel that we could win every battle that we face, every war that we go into, you know, just anything that happens.
And people tell me, you know, thank you for your service. I take that personally, and I'm like, all right, you know, thank you for your support, because the ones that tell me that are the ones that understood or have been in my shoes before, and they know what comes with the sacrifice. And we sacrifice more than what a lot of people think.
I mean, it's always nice when someone says, oh, we support what you do. I mean, that's a great feeling.
So what does it mean to you to be a U.S. soldier?
What does it mean to me? It means everything. It makes you who you are, like a U.S. soldier.
I'm Judith Saldivar, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
Marines from all around the world are invited to the Marine Ball. But only the ones who are stationed in California can actually attend. The only other way you can go to the ball is by special invitation. Brittany Souza received one and found, once a Marine, always a Marine.
That's the sound of over 1,500 Marines at the 241st birthday. Every year on the 9th of November, all Marines are invited to the Marine Corps Ball. It's held in a different location every year.
And it was all right. It was fair. I thought it could have been a little bit more elaborate.
This year, the ball was located at Harris Resort in Southern California. Johnny Martinez, a Vietnam War veteran, attended the ball for his first time.
I never went to one when I was a Marine, because I was in, most of the time I spent my time overseas in Vietnam. And just recently I was able to go because his friends invited me, and I never thought about it, you know. I kind of just disassociated myself from the Marines when I got out. When I got out, I was just out. I mean, there was no one around or anything, you know what I'm saying? I just came home and that was it.
But being at the ball, seeing other Marines, and hearing the music and the chants takes Martinez back to that day when he received an Army draft notice.
And I said, no, not me. I mean, I'm going to join the Army. I'm going to show them I'm going to be a Marine. I don't want to be a wuss. So I became a Marine. Good thing, oh man, my head had to be examined because, but it was too late. But it was a good thing anyway. It was a discipline. It was a good thing for me. It shows to grow up to be a man. Responsibility and listen.
Martinez grew up fast, almost overnight.
This guy from Fresno, myself, they took us to the bus depot downtown Fresno. There used to be a recruiting station there. And they said, well, we're going to take you down to San Diego where the boot camp's at. So it's okay. And then once you get there, the other bus will drop you off at the corner, and the Marine Corps bus will come up, a green bus. So they took us all the way to San Diego and just dropped us off at the corner. He said, okay, guys, this is it. Just wait for the bus right here. The bus will come up and pick you guys up. And it's still waiting, and all of a sudden you see a green bus coming up. And it was weird, like a Twilight Zone. Because you come, it comes up, and it parks, opens the door. Get in here. It's over with. Yeah. Everything is just, now get inside. You say, I'm your mother, I'm your father, I'm going to be your thing forever. Okay, that's why, right there at that moment, I mean, they what would be a good word? They traumatize your mind, they take control of you. Body and soul and mind, everything. You sit down, everything was full, and everybody's just saying, man, it was so, you know.
Martinez was in boot camp for 3 months, and after that, he went to Vietnam.
I was over there for 20 months. Being there, trying to keep myself alive, because the way we, sometimes you get hit, and you run for cover, and that's most of the time that, one of the times I really, well, a lot of times, because of the discipline in boot camp, I was able to survive. I think a lot of things, the tactics they teach us.
Next stop for Martinez was Sanger, California. His best friend, Kat Morales, asked Martinez what he thought about his hometown near Fresno.
And the first words out of my mouth, why? I told him, you know what, I like it here. You know, it was open country and all this. And the first day I said, you know, I think I'm going to stay here another tour, because our Marine tours were 13 months. You have to be there in country.
Morales wanted to go back to Vietnam. He told Martinez if he didn't go back with him, he would put Martinez over his shoulder and carry him back. In November 1967, they went back.
And he got killed in June. I thought I was over this. Excuse me. Maybe those memories lock you a lot of things out, you know what I'm saying? Like when we were in firefights and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, he ended up getting killed, about 20 guys at one time. We were out, and they would send us to different positions to go fight the enemy. And I was in one group, we went on one side, and he was in another group. And they got hit the hardest, you know, they were about 30, 40 guys got killed that day in this squad, you know. Like he was in a chopper, and they were dropping him in this hill, and a lot of firewood was surrounded by them, and they had to take him. And when they were being taken up in the helicopter, they were shot down, and about 20 or some of them got killed in one time, you know. So it was June 8th, 1968, when he got.
After that, Martinez was sent home to Fresno.
Like even coming home and like, how did I get here? You know what I'm saying? Like all of a sudden, it wasn't a dream. Like here was in Vietnam one day, next day here I am back home. You know, so I don't remember a lot of things. You know, so I got in trouble a few times because of that, you know. So it's kind of embarrassing because I was discharged as a PFC, private first class. I was demoted because of an incident over there before I left the country of Vietnam. I got into a fight with some officers. I don't really remember what happened, but they cut my rank. I was a corporal.
He had a hard time adjusting to a normal life.
Yeah, a lot of drinking, you know what I'm saying? Because you don't really, over there, that's all you did was, you're in a war zone, but that's all, the beer and drinking, smoking pot, you know what I'm saying? And then when I came home, I continued that because I didn't know what else to do.
Martinez searched for an answer. In spite of the trauma, he felt lucky to be alive. He still has flashbacks.
Well, it was the Lord that had a hand over me, because many times I could have got hit. Like one time we were getting hit and we were in the field in the middle of the hill, because what it is, you set up a perimeter. On the outside you have the grunts, and in the middle you have the guns, which I was one of those guys in the middle at the time. And we get hit, and then one time I was running for cover, and there was a foxhole, and the guy was in there, said, get out, there's no room for you here, get out of here. So I took off running. As soon as I took off running, got out of the hole, a rocket hit behind him. I don't know if it killed him or not, but I just kept going. And then another time I'm running, I'm ducking back, and a rocket went over my head, you know what I'm saying? And so it was, you know, and they would send us at operations, and we were supposed to go here, but this changed our mind at the last minute, and we'll go over here. And the people that they sent over here would get hit pretty hard and get killed, a lot of those guys. It was, I mean, you know, it was just a destiny or whatever you want to call it.
As Martinez sat alone at the table at the Marine Ball, he thought back to some of the mistakes he made.
I could have, like, I got a little piece of metal here on my arm, and, but being that you're a Marine, and I could have got a Purple Heart. Like, now I realize, because back then when you're in there, you never think about anything. You know, and so when I got here, now that I'm home here, this is, for a Purple Heart, your family can benefit out of it. They can go to school, you can get this and that. And now it's too late because, hey, they said, be a Marine, face up to it. It's only a scratch, don't worry about it. I said, okay. Now that cost me money, but it's okay.
Many years have passed since Martinez came home. He tries not to think about the war, but the Marine ball has stirred up some old wounds. Brittany Sosa, Fresno State Focus, Radio Edition.
Many people are still talking about the circumstances of the outcome of the election. Among all the talk, two media professionals came together to build a website to give their two cents. Edmar Archila explains.
At just a couple of weeks out of the elections, things seem rather interesting. Between the political talk and analysis that are shown on television and heard on the radio, Bud Elliott and Dennis Hart are blogging their two gents worth of two cents.
And then I'd ask the tough questions and you'd ask the nice
ones,
right?
Okay. Whenever
you want to start. This is all going on tape, isn't it?
Dennis Hart describes how his career started.
Well, I went to Fresno State as a broadcast journalism major, got on KFSR as a disc jockey, sports director, news director, fell in love with radio. I was listening to a weekend show on KMJ that was from NBC Radio. It was on for 20 years. It was called Monitor. It was on all weekend long. News, sports, comedy, variety, all of this. I fell in love with Monitor and knew I wanted to go to work for radio. Knew it. My parents wanted me to become a lawyer, and I thought perhaps I was going to become a geography teacher when I got there, but I fell in love with radio. So after I graduated with that degree in broadcasting and journalism, I was very fortunate. I had been working part-time at Channel 30 as a floor director and film editor.
Throughout his career, he worked in different reporting and managing positions in different parts of the country. He retired from the local talk station in 2011. And as elaborate of a career Hart had, so too was Bud Elliott's.
I started out as a disc jockey at a rock and roll station in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when I was a junior in high school in 1965. It was KLOS AM radio, and that sort of got me hooked on radio and broadcasting, and I've been there ever since. So that was 1965, so I've been doing, I did about almost 50 years in broadcasting at a lot of different places.
And it also includes reporting and managing positions at different stations in Colorado and Florida. He even anchored for CNN Headline News, then CNN2. After working for several stations, he was hired in Fresno in the winter of 1986, and aside from a brief absence from television, he returned. But something happened.
So I did that for a couple of years and then kind of had to retire because I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which makes it a little hard to do that kind of work. And so that's that story.
And it was in retirement. Ideas came together to set up a website.
Well, it was this very table. This table.
Well, you tell the story. I'll start the story. We left the broadcasting industry because we got old. That's why we left the broadcasting.
Well,
for your turn.
Yeah, I mean, we both could have stayed, but yeah. What's the sense? When I've always been of the opinion that you want to leave when you're pretty much at the top of your game.
Right.
And so I saw a little decline starting, and I'm sure it would have gotten worse and worse and worse. I'm not speaking for Dennis necessarily in that regard, but it was time for me to get out of broadcasting. Dennis had his own reasons.
You want to leave when people still want you to be there,
yeah.
Not when they want you to go. And that's what we both tried to do.
So what are two old codgers who just left the broadcasting business do? They come to Starbucks, this table, and BS about, you know, the good times we had covering plane crashes and stuff. But we also, you know, talk a little bit of politics. And for some reason, Dennis said, why don't we blog about it? And I said, Dennis, not a bad idea. Let's do it. But how do we do that? Because we don't know anything about it.
Nothing.
My son could have started us up. His son did start us up and did a terrific job. Otherwise, we'd still be talking about it because we didn't have a clue.
No skills.
But we do know how to write a little news article or a little opinion piece or a little essay or a little, you know, something. And we now have learned how to upload it, and so we're all set.
And in keeping tabs on the news business, Dennis Hart explains.
One of the things we talked about at this very table, and it took weeks to determine what we should do, is that we saw things going on in the national media and being reported and locally, and we looked at the television stations and we said, well, okay, that's a pretty young reporter out there. In fact, they're all pretty young reporters. And there's no perspective there. They don't have a history of the city. And there aren't a lot of people who have a history of the city.
Yeah, and it means that we have to yell at the television almost every night.
It means we're old, right? But we've covered things for decades in the city. And so when something happens, probably it happened earlier. And probably there's an antecedent to almost every story, and there's a background, and no one knows it.
There's something Bud said to coworkers and colleagues, and that was, when you retire, you become irrelevant.
Personally.
Being in a newsroom, a busy, you know, TV newsroom, is like being at the center of the earth. It's where you're in the middle of a vortex. It's where all the news is coming in from all the different sources. All the national, international news is coming right into your little local newsroom. And you're working with the producers and the reporters and the other anchors, writing your leads and your transitions and this, that, and the other. It's all happening right here, and you're in the center of it for your whole career. And then suddenly it stops, and the silence is deafening. I mean, it's why you think you are not relevant anymore, because you're really not. You're not part of that anymore. It's not a negative thing necessarily, but it is so different not to be involved in.
So what goes into uploading content for the Elliot Hart Report?
The difference is the audience is smaller out there, okay? We're not on KMJ or on KC anymore. And now it's this little blog. But that little blog, which may have 25 or 50 hits a day or so, still, that's an outreach from us. It says, here's what we think about something. It's not a blowtorch. We're not doing it as a political vendetta or anything. He and I never talk about what we're going to post, except in one instance. I don't know what he's posting. He doesn't know what I'm posting. We do not have a set political opinion. Sometimes we disagree, sometimes we agree. But the only time we've ever really collaborated is right before the election, the Sunday night before the election at 7 o'clock, we each put up simultaneously our predictions with the same headline.
Yeah.
Hart, so-and-so's going to win, Clinton, Elliot, Trump wins.
But we agreed that's what we were going to do.
We agreed
weeks before.
And noon afterward, after the election, we did the same thing. Here's why so-and-so won. But that's the only coordination. We're just having a ball.
At a time where many news sites look to consolidate their operations to the internet, Elliot and Hart talk about the news consumption in the current digital age.
Not yet, but there will be. There always is. The thing I worry about with people with blogs and internet news, you know, the younger generation now gets most, if not all, of their news by reading a screen instead of a physical newspaper. How do you verify that what you're reading on screen is accurate? Or is it just some couple of fogies who have a blog and you think you're getting the news out of those two guys, but they're just kidding you, and they're just telling stories and BS and stuff, but people think that's the truth. And in other words, are people really becoming adequately informed by reading stuff off the internet, by reading four or five blogs or Facebook or whatever the hell they read?
We have more information sources now than we've ever had, and arguably people are less informed now than they ever were, because they can now compartmentalize their news consumption, put themselves in the bubble where they only go to websites that agree with their biases,
yeah,
as opposed to getting news. You know,
and is that healthy? Are they not getting any bad news?
I don't think
we all need to hear some bad news too.
And we all
just
need,
for texture.
And we all need to hear news that we disagree with. News that doesn't necessarily just blowtorch our political opponents.
If you'd like more information on the website, you can go to twogentsworth.com. Edmore Chila, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
Next week on Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, we'll go to Strummer's Nightclub in downtown Fresno and meet with some of their artists and fans. And we'll learn about sex discrimination in sports media.
Fresno State Focus Radio Edition is produced by Professor Faith Sislow. Our stories and interviews are produced and edited by Tristan Lewis, Brittany Sosa, Alexis Govea, Judith Saldivar, Talia Arredondo, and Edmar Archila, who is also our sound engineer.
This program is produced in collaboration with 90.7 KFSR. For Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, I'm Tyler Bartlam.
And I'm David Chavez. Have a great morning.
KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Saturday mornings at 5. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.